From that reading, even Jesus can't go home again. He's had a pretty amazing run, taught with authority and wisdom, healed the sick and the despised, fomented a growing movement of disruptive compassion. You'd expect a hero's welcome, yet the people who knew him as a young man reject him. Isn't this Mary's son, they say, conjuring up a limiting origin story that puts him in his place? For reasons that we would perhaps recognize, they want no part of the renewal that he's offering. So Jesus takes his leave, looking for people and places that want to be reborn. I thought about Jesus' search for home this week as we celebrated the 4th of July and our American legacy of rebirth, rehearsing the origin stories of our homeland. Consider some of the civic scriptures that has formed us as a nation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. If there must be trouble, let it be in my day, that my child may have peace. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I wonder, do America's foundation myths undergird the house that we're building today? As a child reading American history, the textbook story bore little relation to the people that I knew well. Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, and Adams were grand individuals from old money places like Virginia and New York or Maryland and Massachusetts, and my working-class neighbors struggled to connect their illustrious lives to our own. The official heroes were all striking men, at least in the illustrations, handsome and white and privileged, while my first heroes were women and pretty scruffy men from towns called Hot Springs and Mount Ida and Little Rock. They were teachers, mostly. Coach Barlow taught me how to steal second base, how to change the oil in his pickup truck, how to look someone in the eye whenever I introduced myself. Miss Stephanie, the art teacher, wore wigs and tie-dyed shirts, and she played Jimi Hendrix in the art room. And she showed us how to make sculpture out of other people's trash. Miss Johnson lined us up each morning and gave every student a hug and quietly slipped a sandwich into the lunch bags of the kids that she thought felt too skinny. When I was a fifth grader at that inner city school funded by Johnson's Great Society program, Senator J. William Fulbright visited, and I was asked to interview him, cub reporter of the Kramer Elementary School News. I had no idea who he was at the time, which is probably just as well because I might have been nervous. I do remember standing through our conversation because Fulbright's long legs didn't fit under our short desks. I remember being surrounded by cameras and men in suits and sensing that the senator took my questions seriously. A complex figure, the only senator to oppose funding McCarthy's witch hunting committee, he had also voted against three landmark civil rights acts. Yet, by the day we spoke, he had become an ardent supporter of educational initiatives for poor children and racial minorities. He showed me that even adults can grow and change and follow their better angels, and Fulbright joined the ranks of my heroes that week. Some of you will remember that one of our other congressmen at the time crashed into the tidal basin in Washington, D.C., riding with an exotic dancer known as the Argentine Firecracker. But this being Arkansas, we reelected him that fall. Wilbert E. Mills may not be heroic, but I've learned a lot from him too. He was an early supporter of school integration, a champion of health care for poor seniors, and after the Tidal Basin incident, an admitted and recovering alcoholic. All of my heroes have suffered and risen. I look to Maya Angelou, to Bart Giamatti, my college president, later the commissioner of baseball, to Barack Obama, to Zora Neale Hurston, Frederick Buechner, Dee Watkins, and Erica Bridgeford of Baltimore. Each has helped me see that children from unlikely places can study hard and make a difference in this country. They've helped me see that being a patriot and a dissident are not mutually exclusive, and that being a person of hope is a commitment to action. My heroes have taught me that reinvention and redemption, even resurrection, are particularly American traits. We believe in starting over. More than that, Jesus teaches us not to wait for the emblematic individual or to expect the heroine to do it all when she arrives. Rather, the people have saving work in which every one of us can be engaged. Can you clearly and simply state the principles that you deeply care about, whether Christian or American or otherwise? Do you embody them? Are you somebody's hero? If not, what can you do about that? Every American I know has skeletons in his closet, but there's treasure there too. One of my ancestors was an indentured servant who traded prison in Wales for passage to Baltimore. Another relative shot and killed a community figure in Indiana just after the Civil War because the individual had terrorized a black man who worked for my family. The sheriff came at midnight to tell my guilty relative that if he didn't get out of town, he was going to be hung in the morning. A great-great-grandfather was a missionary to the native peoples of Oklahoma and Arkansas, and he married one of his Choctaw parishioners, which is not what he was supposed to do. We have a long strain of heavy drinkers and teetotalers, a parallel line of them, farmers and preachers, activists and naysayers, social climbers and white trash, which is to say, we're a pretty typical American family. If each of us will learn our personal and national stories of grace, both the falling down and the rising up, it'll be harder for us to dismiss out of hand any individual, any racial or ethnic group, any gender or political party as less than or other. E Pluribus Unum was not only an 18th century ideal. Out of the many, one could be written across every birth certificate and green card, our country's motto inviting us each day to live like the single, broken, yet glorious family that we're called to create. We can be each other's keepers when we have the courage to hear one another's most difficult struggles, to honor our different perspectives and respond not with criticism, but with resources and mutual respect. Who will respond to the call of this country's characters, like my crazy Aunt Sue, your Pocahontas, his Sojourner Truth, her Sonia Sotomayor? Each is our sister, right? We belong to each other. Wherever we come from, whatever we have, the American experiment calls us to live for others, not only for ourselves, redefining home, recreated as a new family, rededicated to the well-being of all. And what about our lives as Christians? As followers of the disruptor, Jesus. His story, like that of our country, is more complicated than the official version. Don't forget that after 3 years of teaching and healing that focused on the poor, the imprisoned, the blind, and the oppressed, Jesus' family thought he was out of his mind. Moreover, the religious establishment hated him, and the political authorities had had enough. And so Rome deployed all the brutal measures it had at its disposal to crush this insurgent movement: rendition, interrogation, torture, mockery, humiliation, and then a sadistic execution designed as a social deterrent to any other troublemakers who might challenge authority and disturb the peace. Given the response, it was clear that Jesus threatened the nation in a revolutionary way. But what was his crime? Disruptive compassion. He loved all the wrong people in all the wrong places. That's what he got killed for. Disruptive compassion. He wanted liberty and justice for all. The same way of living and loving that each of us is called to embody as citizens and people of faith. To run to those who've been cast out or lost. To welcome the stranger because we were strangers too once. To build in concrete ways such a life-giving community that God will call it home when he sees it. Amen.